So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review,
right now, right? That's what you say. We get it by now.
Stephen Prazak outside the Asbury Park Convention Hall waiting the arrival of Taz, who tonight, speak of the devil, is Taz right now. Taz, look, one quick question. I'll be brief. Tonight is a rarity among rarities at ECW, a unification match. What is your game plan tonight against Sabu?
Another intelligent question, Prazak. You're a genius, brother. My game plan is simple. You see, ECW tried to hide the fact that I busted Sabu's jaw a little over a month ago in North Carolina. So they're trying to hide it. That's cool, but I'm going to go after his jaw. I'm going after his jaw. I'm telling you, Sabu, my game plan, brother. I'm coming after your jaw like a shark, going after that blood and water, like stink on shit. I will be after his jaw. And when it's all said and done, I will still have the World Heavyweight belt, and I'll also have the belt I created, the FTW belt. And I will be the unified heavyweight champion.
Well, that certainly answers that question. So going after the jaw is not a little intense,
don't
you think?
Yeah, that's intense. See, that's what I do for a living, schmuck. I hurt people. And Sabu, I hate your guts, and you hate me. I wouldn't want any other way. And as far as other champions in this business, who can beat me? Who can beat Taz? Ric Flair? He's a 50-year-old man. Is there anybody out there who believes Ric Flair, a 50-year-old man, can beat me, Taz, in his prime, the world champ? Steve Austin, tremendous entertainer. Everybody loves Steve Austin. Good athlete, too. But you know what? He can't beat me. I'd make him tap. In a New York minute, he would tap. Maivia, Mankind, Hogan, it doesn't matter. I am the one and only World Heavyweight Champion. And at the end of tonight, I will be the FTW champ and the world champ. Because I'm Taz, the World Heavyweight Champion. Sabu, tonight, beat me if you can. Survive if I let you.
Welcome to Review Away. I'm John Pollock, joined by Wei Ting.
Yeah.
Wei, do you feel alive today?
Yeah.
Do you feel like living safely? Which was the second option for the pay-per-view.
No. I'm all about dangerous.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Living dangerously.
I know.
An ode to Paul Heyman's former alias.
Yeah.
How is everything?
Good.
What are we drinking today?
Just a coffee.
Is camp day upon us?
I guess so.
I see hashtags all over this thing. Hashtag jour de camp, which I'm sure, they only have it
in
French.
Just careful, you're going to spill it.
No, I'm not. I'm very good with these things.
No.
I'm battling a bit of a throat issue.
I was too last week.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, I don't think it's from me. I think it's just from the season.
No. It's not from you because...
It's from the weather changing.
What's going on with the weather? I made a joke Saturday. I went out for a nice little walk and it was so damn cold out. And I joked later in the evening. I said, to my wife, I'm like, I guarantee you it's going to snow tomorrow. It's a pure joke. And it fucking snowed on Sunday.
Yeah.
There were like it snowed.
There are like little...
In May.
There are little pellets of like hail.
Oh.
But, yeah.
I hate this, man.
Yeah, it wasn't so bad.
I'm all for global warming, by the way.
I mean, being up here, I guess it would help for a few years.
Not so much year-round. You know what? Maybe not pro-global warming, but let's just keep our seasons intact. I want to know that in May, I can walk out with a light jacket or a hoodie and be fine. I don't need to be worrying about hail.
So then you're against global warming.
I guess I'm completely against global warming as I think about it closer. Okay.
Or maybe you should just move to, like, California.
No, I couldn't deal with this heat year-round.
Okay.
I do like snow in the winter.
Yeah.
Very nice to look at.
Mm-hmm.
I can deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think you know what's coming.
Yeah.
Every December, I'm not waking up wondering, oh, shit, it's cold out today. I know what to expect. It's a little seasonal change.
Maybe you should just stay inside, man.
I've contemplated it.
Yeah.
Could I do everything I need to in the confines of my own home?
Of course you can. You not heard of Amazon?
No more interaction. It's fine. You can join me via Skype.
Now more than ever, I think we can do everything without getting out of bed.
Yeah, we're getting to that.
Yeah.
So that's always a possibility.
Yeah, paralysis seems like it would be more viable at this point than ever before in history. Like, if I were to become paralyzed, terrible. I wouldn't want it, wouldn't wish it on anybody, but at the same time, I'd rather be paralyzed now than being paralyzed in 1850. You know what I mean? It'd be terrible if I was paralyzed back then.
Yeah, that would be a much tougher go of things.
Yeah.
Are you excited about tonight?
Oh, yeah. The Blue Jays.
The Blue Jays.
Yeah. Going to a Blue Jays game.
Together.
I know.
I can't believe you invited me.
Yeah, why? Why do you say that?
I just figured on the list. Everyone has their internal list of people they go to when they have an extra ticket for something.
Don't be silly.
I didn't realize I would get the call. So who canceled? Who couldn't go?
Come on.
Was I number five, number six?
No, absolutely not. Stop.
Well, I'm excited. Who are they playing tonight?
The Tampa Bay Rays.
The Rays.
Not the Devil Rays, as I was.
Why'd they change it?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Devil Rays? I don't know. I suppose maybe there's a religious aspect to it.
Oh, please.
To the Devil Rays.
Yeah, that seems a little silly.
It's not Satan's team.
If we're going to assess all the Major League Baseball team names, and we're going to have the Indians with that,
that
name. That's cool, that's okay. But Devil Rays.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a perfectly logical reason they got rid of it. Maybe it was a...
Devil Rays is also longer. Rays just kind of like rolls off the tongue a little better.
The D-Rays, they'd call them.
The D-Rays?
You have to shorten things, Wade. Any word that's more than four letters, you shorten.
How about the Bubba Rays?
The Bubba Rays.
Yeah. Tampa Bay Bubba Rays.
They could put out a Blu-ray about them. We forgot to talk on Monday, Way, about a big, big incident involving the Blue Jays on Sunday.
Oh, my God.
Jose Bautista.
Dude, are you sure we forgot to talk about it?
No, I think we did talk about it now that I think about it. Did we talk about it before the show or during the show? I think it was during the show.
We talked about it before and during and after the show, and now we're talking about it again.
If you were Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball, Way, and you saw that display on your field.
Yeah.
What suspension would you get? Forget the rest of the team, because everyone got involved, but the main ones were Odor and Bautista.
Yeah.
What? How many games?
Well, at this point, don't we already know the...
No, I'm not talking about what they got. I'm saying you, as Commissioner Ting, would dole out to these two. Because to set this up, this was Bautista, they thought, was kind of delivering a receipt here after being hit earlier in the game.
Oh, okay.
Because he got hit and then had a very... he slid in the second, which Odor thought was a little too aggressive.
Wasn't that a big controversy, the sliding thing?
I didn't see a big problem with it.
But I mean, even prior to this, wasn't
well, it was, the, you know, they were linking thing. This to the bat flip incident from the series.
But I mean, like, the whole concept of sliding to, you know, block a double play.
For it's instance. Kind of like, it's an unwritten rule. It's like, once you're out, you don't have to take the guy out and slide and try and take his legs out from under him. It's like, you're out.
But you're allowed.
You're allowed. Right. And it's also incumbent upon the defensive player to get out of the way.
Mm, okay.
There were times I played in my league, Way, where, like, if you were in the runner's way, they would run you over if you were in their way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just grabbing the ball. If you're in there, it's not the runner's job to run around you. Right. They will run through you. It can be very violent.
So whose side are you on in all this?
I mean, I feel Bautista was justified in sliding. I didn't really have that much of a problem with it. Mm. I would definitely give the heavier suspension to Odor.
Mm.
He kind of reeked of injustice here.
Yeah. I would probably give him equal punishment on both sides.
Equal? Wow. Yeah. Even like though it was games? Bautista who got decked here.
He did the shoving first, though. Didn't he not? Did he not do the shoving first? And it was simply Odor who retaliated with a very nicely placed punch to the jaw. And Batista tried to get his off too, but he didn't get it in time.
The first headline is from GQ magazine. How the hell was Jose Bautista still standing after the knockout punch of the year?
He took that pretty nice.
Yeah.
And
either he has a hell of a chin or Dur has horrible form.
Well, I don't know how much these guys weigh, but,
that was a solid shot.
Yeah, how much does Bautista weigh?
How
much does this guy weigh?
Well, he's 1.83 meters tall.
Okay, that doesn't mean anything to me. Let's find out. He's the imperial system.
Yeah, they don't really have weights here. Let's find. They should have that in the media guide. Everyone's
been drinking
86 kilograms,
which again means nothing to me.
Us Canadians always need to convert.
We actually should be using kilos, but nobody does.
No, no one does. Convert wizard.
My God, it takes us long to 190 pounds, basically.
So he'd be he's almost a middleweight.
Okay, yeah, that's enough knockout power. Now, what about well,
that's Batista though. Oh, yeah, he's eating doing this. What's this this fucker's name? What's his first name? How do you spell it?
O-D-O-U-R.
That's but his first name is something crazy.
Ronid. Roughned.
Roughned.
Rough.
That should be how we do pronounce it now. Let's get his weight. Imagine.
Rough odor. Yeah.
This guy was definitely teased as a child, which maybe we can go deeper into of his reason for retaliating.
It is O-D-O-R.
O-D-O-R, correct. This is a lot of fun here.
Oh, this is terrible radio, especially for people who don't watch baseball or don't
live. Everyone's seen this, though. Yeah. I was, when we were at the show on Sunday night, look, the Raptors have just won a seventh game, and all of the highlights were on this.
Hold on a second. You're working at a sports radio station.
Yes.
Not everybody who listens to this is listening to a sports radio station. Nor.
I'm saying, though, if you were a program director, okay? We were at TSN Radio on Sunday night, yeah. And they have Sports Center on where we're doing this.
I'm talking about the audience of this podcast.
Okay, I'm just telling you though that this crossed over.
All right,
this,
whatever, I don't care.
The seventh game, sports.
Fine.
Anyway, I'm not going to find his weight.
Okay.
Now I want to find his weight.
Oh, fuck.
I found it here. 190 pounds. So these guys are nearly virtually identical. A pound difference, way.
They would be middleweights who probably had to cut down to 185 and then.
These guys would honestly be, they'd be fighting at welterweight.
Yeah, they would.
They would cut down at least 19, 20 pounds.
Yeah.
And then bulk back up the next day.
But I mean, if you're Jose Bautista, you have to be pretty pissed off that this is everywhere. All over social media. Of you getting a punch to the jaw.
But he's also getting a lot of credit that he was still standing after this thing.
Yeah, but still, you know, forever in your career, somebody Googles your name.
You're going to see that image is going to be attached to him. It's going to be the bat flip and this.
So the question is, I don't know if they're going to play each other again this season.
Oh, they 100% they'll play them.
Okay, well then.
I hope they meet in the playoffs.
You have to wonder what they're planning or what Jose Bautista.
Dude, that next game. In baseball, it's never the next meeting. It's always a game where you're least suspecting it because definitely. Everyone's going to have their eyes drilled to the next game and nothing's going to happen. But then two series from now, in the middle of a four-game set, it's going to be all hands on deck and they're going to lose their shit on one another.
It'll
be on a series where you're not expecting it because that's how these guys think.
Yeah.
It's the same in hockey.
I can't wait.
So. That's
bigger than Connor and Diaz. It's the.
I think we should go to a Texas game later this season. I'm sure they'll be back here.
I'm sure they'll all be sold out. I mean, the heat between these two teams, great build so far.
It's going to be amazing. It's going to be like Matt Brown, Damian Maia in Brazil.
Oh, yeah.
They all just hate Matt Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Well, today we're chatting about living dangerously, which is what the Texas Rangers and Toronto Blue Jays are going to be doing when they lock up later this year.
That's a decent segue. Not bad.
Sunday, March 21st, 1999, Mr. Ting.
Mm-hmm.
This was prior to Viewer's Choice carrying ECW pay-per-views, and thus was a very hard product to follow if you were in the country of Canada, though there were gray markets of which you could follow.
I wonder why it took Viewer's Choice so long, because I mean, they didn't really have that long of a run. I suppose it took them being on TNN first, right?
Well, they locked in Yeah, they got the deal with Viewer's Choice, and I believe it was Anarchy Rules, which was the first one that was back on Viewer's Choice, which would have been the first pay-per-view after they debuted on TNN. Mm-hmm. So you look at those things, and this was a time when ECW, they were going through tons of financial issues at this time, because various people have always talked about ECW. It was very difficult because they had to wait so long to get their revenue from pay-per-views. They'd have to wait a few months, yet they had all of these bills to pay, talent to pay, and they had all of this money, but it was all in holding until they could get it sometimes 2 or 3 months later. So it would require them to sometimes fall behind in certain aspects. And I believe it was right before this pay-per-view that they lost a number of markets they were in with their television because they couldn't pay them. They were paying a lot of these markets to have their hardcore TV on. Mm. So going into this, there were certainly a lot of issues with ECW, a lot of talent that had recently left. Public Enemy was mentioned on this show. They had lost Bam Bam Bigelow not all that long ago. The Sandman had left. So you were seeing a lot of talent.
Shane Douglas was leaving, right?
Shane Douglas, he would leave.
Wasn't that the storyline?
Well, the storyline was he was teasing his retirement, but he was still in the fold here. But he would leave in the summer. He would then go to WCW. So, yeah, he was. He would not be long for this promotion either. So certainly at an interesting time in their history. But they did sell out the Asbury Park Convention Center to a tune of $100,000 at the gate. So good for them.
Yeah.
I believe it was 3,000 to 4,000 people here in attendance. And we kicked things off with Steve Prazak, who was outside of the convention hall, and he was looking for Taz. And guess, of all the people on the roster, guess who happened to walk up at this exact moment when he was looking for this exact person? It's like, hey, look, there's Taz. He's here. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable timing mm-hmm. on Steve Prazak's part. And he decided to interview Taz with the wind in the outdoors here in Asbury Park. And tonight we were going to have a unification match between Taz and Sabu for the ECW and FTW heavyweight championships.
Yes.
Two would become one
mm-hmm.
in 1999. And Taz says that he broke Sabu's jaw and says that is his game plan tonight. Going after the jaw. What an asshole.
He's going to be on Sabu's jaw like stink on shit, were his exact words.
Can't separate those two. And says he will be the unified champion. He asks, what other champions in this business can beat him? Ric Flair, who's a 50-year-old man. Steve Austin, who, man, did he definitely add a qualifier here. He's a great athlete, a great champion. He was not the champion as of this promo, but nonetheless. But then name drops Maya Villa, Mankind, and Hulk Hogan. Maybe the last guy to refer to The Rock as Maya Villa, as late as 1999.
Maybe he means Peter Maya Villa.
Maybe he was calling out the high chief.
Yeah.
What's he done lately? So, I mean, certainly at this time, Taz was built as, you know, the hard ass that in a shoot could take care of all these guys, which was a great promotion that they built around Taz. But you look back to this and very silly, I think, back in 1999. But this was at the time when ECW was positioning our guys are real, or at least Taz was real.
To call out other champions, you mean?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm never a big fan of the calling out of other promotions, maybe because it's been done to death so much and it's kind of just an eye roller today.
Yes.
But people got off on this in 1999. That was a big charm of ECW, was that they'd call out the other talent and the other promotions and position themselves as the underdog that had the legit credentials.
Yeah, I mean, and also keep in mind this was sort of a time when the whole aspect of shooting in a promo was, I suppose, a lot more novel than, you know, it is in 2016. And I think
today it's a lot lamer.
Yeah, and I think
I'm shooting, brother.
And I think ECW has always kind of tried to blur those lines between reality and not real. And this is a promo that just kind of exemplified that.
Joey Styles is in the ring, and he says, tonight there are no paid-off judges at ringside, no predetermined draws, and Don King has been barred from the building, which is a knock on the recent pay-per-view debacle between Lennox Lewis and Evander Holyfield at Madison Square Garden that did end in a split draw, much like the Sergio Moraes Luan Chagas fight. on the weekend way at UFC 198.
Oh, of course.
Another split draw.
Yes.
But this one did 1.2 million buys, and a lot of people were pissed. And ECW capitalized on this by building their whole main event as counter to what people got screwed on pay-per-view a few weeks earlier with, and trying to position their main event not all that different than Kurt Angle and Samoa Joe we reviewed. Like, this is the big title fight, and mm-hmm. positioning it in a very serious light involving these two rivals.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a clear theme throughout the night. And then he previewed the card. We go into the opening video and then kick things off with Super Crazy against Yoshihiro Tajiri. Yoshihiro Tajiri in trunks and 28 years old at the time, a young Tajiri, as Steve Austin would refer to him as.
Blue and white trunks before he changed up his look and kind of adopted the Buddha gimmick. And this was a famous ECW rivalry that I think we got to see in a more, bit of an earlier incarnation.
Yeah, this was after Tajiri had left Big Japan, went to Mexico, and then that formed the bridge, to come into ECW. And I think when you look at the career trajectory of Tajiri, I mean, he was someone that came into ECW, flourished under that system, and I think in WWE, that start for Tajiri,
yep.
I thought they did a great job. That first month, to me, at least, he was the highlight of Raw every week for me because he was having some great matches that first week and some great comedy stuff, too, with Regal and Austin. And then he would segue into kind of a minor character.
Yeah.
So this match, it kicked off very fast-paced transitions, got an ovation early on and a chant of ECW. There was a handspring back elbow by Tajiri, and Crazy got sent to the floor. Tajiri hit a somersault plancha over the corner post to the floor, and then followed that with an Asai moonsault. This was also, of course, none of the pretty blue mats on the floor that ECW would pat themselves on the back, the fact that we don't cushion falls on the floor, which I watched these. I was like, of all your promotional gimmicks, this was one that really should have been second-guessed.
It worked for them, right?
Did it work?
Yeah.
These guys just crashing on the floor? I mean,
sure.
Did people really think, yeah,
the,
this is awesome?
The truth is, maybe they couldn't afford these mats. And, you know, it's like, whatever, like that marketing thing that always says, take your weaknesses and turn them into strengths, like Buckley's. You know, it tastes so bad, but it's effective. And that kind of became maybe ECW's tag. The fact that, oh, we can't afford these mats, and let's use it as a strength of ours.
Well, I don't know about that. I would maybe consider not booking Solly Graziano and putting that into the padding budget. That would be my call.
Mm.
The match continued. Crazy recovered, hit moonsaults off all three corner turnbuckles, getting a two count. Tajiri was in a tree of woe and got attacked by Crazy, followed with a quebrada for a two count. Tajiri then got his knees up on a moonsault, landed a hard kick to the body and a baseball slide drop kick while Crazy was in the tree of woe. Crazy then went for a springboard, and he slipped and fell, and this crowd just annihilated poor Super Crazy here. We were at the Ring of Honor show last week, and there was a spot where someone lost somebody, and the crowd just went quiet, and you could tell they were just being so polite. ECW at this time, man, they just, when they smelt blood of a spot gone awry,
mm-hmm.
they just attacked the corpse and ate it for all it was worth. This is a chant I have always detested, but one that was loud and clear in 1999.
Yeah, I mean, I think you might detest it again because all this stuff has been played out so often, or, you know, this is like this is awesome chant. You know, by this point, I think everybody's at least a little bit tired of it. But at the time, you got to remember this was sort of like ECW was when, you know, a crowd kind of started first becoming sentient. You know what I mean? And like having that collective hive mind where we can all say one thing at the very same time and have it be broadcast on the TV show.
I'm fine with that. I've just always thought the "you fucked up" thing. I just think it's just incredibly disrespectful. It ends the match to me. I think it really hurts the momentum of a match. I've just never been a fan of it from the first time I heard it to this most recent time. But that's me.
Are you, do you think Botchamania is disrespectful?
I think Botchamania is very different.
Botchamania is one long "you fucked up" chant.
It's
in video form.
It's also a comedic video, and
so are these chants.
Exactly, and that's going against. This is not a comedy match. This is, to me, it's hurting the match.
But if you're
Botchamania exists in its own.
But if you're watching, say Charmel versus Jenna Maraska, you're not. You know, if they do something bad, then I think the crowd definitely has a right to say something. To chant something like that.
Well, I look at this. This guy's doing a springboard and he slips.
Yeah.
My first concern is, I hope he didn't fuck up and hurt himself. I'm never looking for someone to get hurt.
Right.
And I think there was a certain segment here that didn't give a fuck if any of these guys hurt. It was just an opening for them to get their chant in.
Yeah, perhaps. You're also talking about a show where dudes are falling off of balconies and hitting each other with, like, really hard chair shots and diving through flaming tables. I don't know if health and safety are necessarily, you know, at the top of everybody's concern watching an ECW show at this time.
Well, I'm not going to weigh the same equally. I mean, when you're diving off a balcony, you understand the risk you are taking, I think, in this.
But he just looked like he slipped, you know?
I mean, he was fine. Yeah. He was fine. I'm not a fan of the "you fucked up" chant. I just have never
When I hear "you fucked up" chant, I more so look for how the performer recovers from it. And I thought, in this situation, they recovered pretty well. At least Super Crazy sold the slip. Like,
yep,
it was an actual offensive maneuver that Tajiri somehow did. And I thought they recovered to the point where it just seemed like a regular part of the match if you didn't, you know, if this was like a real thing.
I'll say this. When a spot gets blown like that, I think the recovery, to me, is more important.
Yep.
Some people will just simply write off something that's like, oh, they fuck this up, and that's it. To me, if you incorporate that and work it into the match thinking on your feet, I give all the credit in the world to you, and I'm not going to hold some blown spot against the overall match.
I felt like they did that here. You know, once the Super Crazy slipped, Tajiri was almost encouraging the crowd to scream "you fucked up" at his opponent and took a, basically kind of did his comeback right off of that slip.
How about Joey Styles? Did you catch what he said?
No, what did he say?
Joey Styles said, "It's raining outside, and therefore it's very slippery." Didn't know they were in a outdoor baseball stadium. Tajiri tried to counter a second sit-out powerbomb. Both fell awkwardly here. And then Tajiri hit a hurricanrana. Crazy rolled through into a sunset flip roll-up for the win just out of nowhere in 9:55. They kind of struggled down the stretch here. And then Tajiri bowed to all four sides of the ring and exited after the loss.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was that supposed to mean? Was he on his way out or something?
I don't think he was on his way out. I think it was just a sign of respect to the crowd. Though I don't know what his exact scheduling was with going to Mexico or being with ECW full time at this point.
I thought a solid opener, but like you said, kind of lost steam towards the end there, and seemed a little bit sloppy by the end. But nonetheless, you just see, you know, most of the bulk of the match, and you realize that these two just have this amazing chemistry together.
Yeah, they'd have much better matches together, especially in the 99 and 2000, especially.
But Tajiri, I mean, you know, I think a lot of people might be familiar with his WWE work, but I feel like any of these guys, when you watch them in a promotion like ECW, where they're able to fully demonstrate their pro wrestling ability, it's that much better. And I think Tajiri just here seemed like somebody who was destined to be an immediate hit with North American audiences, somebody who's able to combine a lot of his lucha theatrics with some very stiff
great facials, a lot of charisma.
Yep, and great kicks.
RVD, Sabu, and Bill Alfonso are backstage. Sabu's jaw is all taped up. It's got F-U written on it. And did you notice, as a man that loves to critique the shooting of particular promos, the zoom in and out constantly? I'm sure someone thought this was just, what a unconventional way to shoot a backstage promo. This drove me insane. I had a headache from watching this.
Right, yeah.
For this, it just zoomed in and out, in and out, in and out.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes just being different for the sake of being different, that's not a good enough reason.
Yeah, anyway. I'm sure that was kind of part of the thinking. They didn't want this to look like WWE. Again, I also feel like a big part of what contributed to the production style of ECW was its limitations. You know, we can't afford a big Steadicam rig or, you know, beautiful lighting. So how do we make this shot look interesting? Well, let's have our camera guy do these very erratic movements that, you know, maybe let's
shoot the floor and you can just hear them and you can imagine what their facial expressions
sure.
are like.
Yeah,
never been done before.
We could try that.
Yeah,
TNA kind of tried that a little bit.
Yes. So Sabu is pissed off as RVD is just bragging about all the titles they have, and it ends by RVD asking how he'll be able to carry 5 titles and his partner, which upsets Sabu because if Sabu were to win the ECW title tonight, then they would have 5 titles altogether because they're the tag champions, RVD's the TV champion, and Sabu has the Fuck the World title.
Yes.
So, the manager of champions, Bill Alfonso, earning his nickname with this current run.
Was the TV title always just a remodeled WWF Winged Eagle belt?
They changed it along the way at certain points.
Yeah.
Yeah. Steve Corino is on the microphone. A very young Steve Corino in the ring.
Very thin Steve Corino.
Yes, thin Corino. And he says he doesn't need steroids, which I'm sure some veterans at this time would disagree, or wrestle in foreign lands for fans' respect. And he makes an open challenge, and the challenge is answered by Balls Mahoney and Axel Rotten. And I don't want to belabor the point because we do it on every single one of these ECW shows on the network, but there's such a atmosphere that is lost on these network shows, and the entrances in particular, which were so strong and gave you the sense of how over some of these guys were, that these dubbed over versions.
However, they at least had their version of Big Balls on this show.
Yes.
It wasn't a completely, replaced, like, oh my God, like some of these other ones.
Yeah, I'm looking at Rob Van Dam.
Really awful.
Yeah, they were.
They picked the most generic songs that sounded nothing like the originals, and they had to dub over the crowd noise, obviously. But I don't know how much dubbing they did of Balls Mahoney's entrance, but at least they did have a version of Big Balls that they could use.
Yes. So, Balls Mahoney and Axel Rotten come out, which, of course, both men recently passing away earlier this year. And they come out, and Balls Mahoney is the one that answers the challenge, and we get a brief match between these two. Mahoney is sent to the floor. Corino hits a baseball slide dropkick, and Styles asks if Corino is ready to be on pay-per-view because he was just added to the roster. He hasn't paid his dues yet. Mahoney catches Corino, sends him into a Rotten clothesline. That being Axel Rotten, not a poorly looking one. Mahoney hits a splash off the top and Corino kicks out. And then there's a chant of use the chair. And Mahoney is on top, misses a top rope leg drop, the New Jersey Jam. And then a super kick is hit by Corino. And there were a number of censors throughout this show of wrestlers or fans yelling stuff that got censored, and it was very hard to make out what they were saying.
It was weird because certain things were censored and other things were just completely let go.
Yes, things that were very surprising that were kept in. So Corino grabs the chair and he teases a chair shot, props it up, and instead of using it on Mahoney, sits down to apply a rear chin lock, which I thought was a great spot. Mahoney super kicks Corino after getting out of the rear chin lock and blasts him in the head with this chair shot and pins Corino in 3:47, and he shows off the dented chair as we hear the music to end this.
Did you like this? The finish? What did you think?
Well,
ready for a John Pollock rant?
Nope, no rant. Dented chair.
Yeah. Balls Mahoney, you know, so over with the crowd, despite the not being able to hear the full reaction during his entrance. But you could see how much this crowd loved him. And was he from
Nutley, New Jersey?
Yeah, there you go,
Nutley,
Nutley, New Jersey.
Yes.
And Steve Corino always seemed like somebody who was very, very charismatic,
very good performer at this point. I mean, he was a guy that was doing all the independents at that time, was getting a look at by WWF. He'd show up on Superstars every now and then. But it was in ECW that I thought really he grew as a personality. But his look at this time, I mean, I really didn't see him growing into much. And then when you compare this Steve Corino to the one in late 2000, I mean, he was someone in ECW that did find his spot in that company and grew into something where he did become an important guy in ECW. They showed a video of the Dudleys defeating the Eliminators and then breaking Hack Meyer's neck and then stating that they, quote, beat the citizenship out of Masato Tanaka because he had been coming to ECW on a work visa and then was unable to come to the last pay-per-view because he needed an actual visa and was slated to return later that summer. So that resulted in the Dudleys beating the visa out of Masato Tanaka. Then they said they beat the Extreme out of the Sandman, getting credit for taking him out, breaking Beulah's neck, and then it was revealed that they were paid off by a mysterious benefactor to run off Public Enemy out of town, running them all the way to New York, as Public Enemy had recently left the company and not showing up to finish out some dates with the Dudley boys. And the Public Enemy had gone to the WWF just recently. And so the Dudleys were kind of getting credit for a number of these performers leaving the company. Mm-hmm. And it all led to New Jack being attacked. And it was revealed that New Jack's former partner from the Gangsters, Mustafa, was the one supplying the Dudley boys with the finances to take out all these guys, including New Jack. And New Jack and Mustafa legit had a big falling out. And New Jack had to kind of be talked into doing this program, which was going to culminate in tonight's big match, the Battle of the Gangsters. Wow. New Jack and Mustafa.
Cool.
So that is our backdrop. Antifaz del Norte, Way's favorite.
Yeah.
Against Little Guido was next.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, Way, I got kicked out of my office and had to go work elsewhere, and I came into your room, and you were busy watching Living Dangerously. And
watching this match.
Yes, and I had to leave because I knew I had to rewatch this show, and
oh, you didn't want to be.
I had to move on, and I didn't want to disrupt you.
No, you weren't disrupting me.
I was coming into your office to bug you for a place to work. So
that's fine. That's not a problem.
You were right on this match, Antifaz del Norte.
Antifaz del Norte, great name.
Yes.
Awesome name. I don't know what it means, but man,
well,
it's fun to say.
He's not Profaz,
huh?
He's Antifaz.
Oh, I get it.
Horrible. What does this mean?
Google translate it.
Let's do this.
Antifaz.
Any guesses? This
sounds cool. Whatever Faz means. No.
North Antifaz.
No. Look up a Antifaz. Is that, what is Antifaz? Like a antifreeze type of thing?
Mask.
So no mask. No mask? That's what it means?
I guess that's what it means, yeah.
North? No mask?
Del Norte.
No mask of the North is what it means.
No mask of the North.
Yeah, see?
Okay, well.
We figured it out. Okay. We're smart.
Antifaz del Norte.
That's not nearly as fun to say.
No.
As Antifaz.
Guido is brought out by Sally Graziano. And then Guido.
He's brought up by the Matt Budget, according to you.
The Matt Budget, yes. Sally Graziano. Guido slaps Del Norte. And then Antifaz hits a springboard dropkick and then a tornado dive to the floor. They go back into the ring. Springboard sunset flip roll up for a two count. The crowd is chanting for Tracy Smothers. And Guido says they are not getting him as the team had broken up the prior weekend with Smothers attacking Guido and the FBI falling apart at the seams. There was a side Italian leg sweep off the middle turnbuckle by Guido as the crowd is chanting for Smothers and distracts Guido. And then there appeared to be a boring chant here as the crowd was kind of done with this match. Antifaz hit the Willow and the Wisp that Jeff Hardy is most associated with off the turnbuckle. Sal catches Antifaz on a...
Whisper in the Wind.
The Whisper in the Wind,
Willow,
yes.
Willow is the character.
Wouldn't they call that move... They would call the move sometimes the... Yeah, you're right. The Whisper in the Wind.
Yeah, Willow is his masked character.
Yes, sir. I'm trying to keep all my W's in check when it comes to the Hardys. Right. Sal catches Antifaz on a pescado attempt, slams him through a table on the floor, and just tosses him back into the ring. So remember, we did have a table budget way, quite a large one. And then there's a leg drop off the second turnbuckle, and Guido applies the Sicilian crab for the submission win at 5:38.
Yeah, I mean, it was really, I mean, I would say it was an awful match, but it was just nothing special. And I think more so the fact that I don't think this audience cared too much about Antifaz del Norte, unfortunately. Didn't seem to elicit any big reaction for this.
No, not a whole lot of time for this match to build either. Tracy, some others entered the ring with Tommy Rich and lays out Guido with a forearm. Then they attack Sal with the flag, and this angers Sal as the two end up fleeing the scene and run off. So we're going to get our full-blown, full-blooded Italians feud. Hmm. They plugged ECWWrestling.com, pumping ECW online with online separated with a hyphen in 1999.
Oh, do people not do that anymore?
No, it's no longer on-line.
You don't even really see www dot anymore.
It's very rare.
Yeah. When you write liveaudiowrestling.com, you just write that, right? You don't say www.liveaudiowrestling.com?
No. I only find in the back end sometimes you do have to include the www for a hyperlink.
Right. Yeah.
If you ever want to talk HTML code. Rob Van Dam and Jerry Lynn were next for the ECW television title. Wait. They did a lot of shit in this match. Look at my fucking notes.
Yeah, it's like two pagers.
Holy Christ. Wow. Listen, I thought this was the best match on the show. I thought this was really great.
I like the main event too.
Actually, I did too. Yeah. I enjoyed the main event, and that one surprised me more so than this one. Mm-hmm. If there was a criticism people had of Rob Van Dam matches, it was that it was much less a story, and it was just from one spot to the next.
Sure.
That was, I think, a fair criticism for Rob Van Dam, and I think Jerry Lynn brought the best out of Rob Van Dam, and conversely, I think Rob Van Dam brought the best out of Jerry Lynn. I think these two, just a natural chemistry that they found with one another. Lynn had missed the last pay-per-view with a cracked pelvis, which just sounds completely painful.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I imagine that would affect everything that you were doing.
Oh, God. Even that word, it just sounds like something you would not want to injure. My pelvis?
Definitely, yeah. Take my rib. Don't take my pelvis.
Oh. Joey Styles also says that Lynn has apparently lost some body fat since we've last seen him. Jerry Lynn, not exactly remembered as someone ever that was packing on too many pounds, I feel.
No.
So,
I don't know.
I guess Joey. Maybe. Also, noting how he was underutilized in the WWF and WCW and knocks the marketing genius that was Mr. JL. RVD comes out to some god-awful theme.
It was
not Pantera.
Painfully generic for RVD, but what can you do? There's nothing that there's nothing in the WWE music library that could sound remotely like, you know, that Walk by Pantera. And it's unrealistic to expect them to pay for whatever crazy amount that, you know, these real musicians are asking for.
Yeah, I think it's difficult for anyone that had seen some of these shows originally because the atmosphere was such a crucial part of the ECW experience. And when you take that away, it really, to me, handicaps these shows when you're going back and watching it. I think someone that's watching this for the first time wouldn't get into it as much. I mean, atmosphere to me is such a big part of a show feeling hot or not. Anyway, the match begins. Styles sets this up by saying that most feel it's a guarantee that Rob Van Dam wins this match. And Lynn is just positioned as the big underdog. They do the fish out of water series. Both are on their feet. Van Dam goes to the floor. He's stalling. Van Dam does the splits as Lynn comes off the ropes and leg drops RVD. There was a somersault dive off the apron by Lynn, and then Van Dam got sent over the barricade, and Lynn hit a reverse cross off the ropes into Van Dam in the crowd. And they went through the audience here. Van Dam draped Lynn on the barricade, scaled the barricade, and hit a leg drop. I'll say, Rob Van Dam, him and Sabu, I mean, they would have times where they were just hot and cold with hitting stuff, but, I mean, both of them were... Mm-hmm. I thought on point throughout their respective matches on this card.
Yeah.
Alfonso tosses a chair into the ring, and Van Dam applies a surfboard as he lands on top of the chair with his back.
Yeah, he's,
and I'm like,
he's laying on the chair.
I was like, this is bringing the Page PTO on the table logic to new heights.
Yeah. I'm laying on a chair.
He's laying on a chair, but he did salvage it.
But it does make sense.
So as he has the surfboard applied, he then thrust Lynn in the air, moved out of the way, so Lynn crashed down on the chair. So he gets...
It was cool.
He gets credit for that.
I mean, it made total sense by the end.
Nothing, this would have been one of the dumbest things ever.
As he was doing it, I think everybody was wondering what was going on. I had also never seen RVD do a surfboard before, and he did very well.
The chair is then in the middle, and Lynn hits a sunset flip powerbomb off the turnbuckle, and the edge of RVD's head hits the edge of this chair, just barely. Lynn then blocks a Northern Lights suplex and hits an inverted DDT onto the chair for a two count. Lynn then gets a series of near falls, and Styles sells the idea that he has Van Damme well scouted, and the fans start chanting, "New effin' show," at Jerry Lynn. Alfonso then grabs Lynn's ankle on the turnbuckle, and this allows Van Damme to climb. Lynn hits him through with shots, and then Van Damme leaps, kicks the chair into Lynn's head, and he falls through a table onto the floor, and some fan at ringside just says, "I guess you're not the new show anymore." And this is caught clearly on the broadcast. Van Damme finally gets him into the ring. Lynn kicks out. Van Damme uses a chair to break out of a sunset flip pin attempt again. And then this big spot. They're fighting on the turnbuckle, and there is a table set up on the floor. Lynn goes for a tornado DDT to Van Damme off the turnbuckle to the table on the floor. This table does not break. If I was not watching a 17-year-old show, I would have thought Rob Van Dam was paralyzed here. This looked so brutal. And Joey Styles gives us the update that both athletes are still with us as the match continued. Van Dam, if there was one critique here, I mean, he was nearly dead from this spot. And he recovered in like 60 seconds and was doing not the Rolling Thunder, but rather the tumbling senton splash to Jerry Lynn in the ring and recovered. Lynn hit a tornado DDT inside of the ring, and Van Damme takes it straight down on the head. And the bell rings at the 20-minute mark, which I will say was legit. They legit went 20 minutes. And referee John Finnegan goes to give the title to the challenger, Jerry Lynn, after the time limit. And Lynn doesn't want the title that way. He insists on 5 more minutes. The crowd chants 5 more minutes.
And what does the challenger get the title?
This was completely nonsensical. And then they tried to salvage it with a promo later with John Finnegan, who said, "That's not how things work in ECW. And I was going to give the title to the deserving person." I was like, it was a fucking draw. This made no sense. This was completely illogical that Jerry Lynn would be given the title. And even as the babyface wanting to win it the right way, you look like a fool turning this down and then being beaten in the next minute 17, which is what happened as Van Damme hit a Van Damminator and a 5-star frog splash in the overtime period. And in 1:17, pinned Jerry Lynn. But a great match I thought these two had.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. And again, you really see and can appreciate the incredible chemistry that the two have. And also, again, in the case of somebody like an RVD, getting to see him do so much more than he was able to showcase in his WWE matches. You know, I'd say the 20 minutes kind of felt like it for me towards the end, but it was still a very good match with these two.
Yeah, while this wasn't their first singles match, I think this is where you can trace the rivalry too. They would follow this at the next pay-per-view. And if you remember on that first TNN show, it was highlights of their Hardcore Heaven match that they used. Mm-hmm. They thought this is the best match we can show to hook new viewers. So these two became synonymous with one another. And when they both finally got to the WWF, their lone televised match ended up on Sunday Night Heat. That's where things got them. Jerry Lynn did not have quite the WWE run. Then we got a video on the main event, which was voiced by Paul Heyman, identifying New Jack and
Mustafa, was that right? No, that was the next match.
Sabu and Taz.
Sorry, it was Taz and Sabu here, who he labeled as being hardcore before hardcore was cool. And they had a face-off at November to Remember. They had met at Barely Legal in 97. And tonight, they will battle to become the undisputed heavyweight champion.
It wasn't a flashy video by any means, but I thought it told the story very clearly. And it was a very well-written, well-read script by Paul Heyman here.
Now, at this time as well, they had recently started working with porn star Jasmine St. Clair. And I think she had done some promotion for this pay-per-view. So they had to fit her on in some form on this show. So they showed an angle shot earlier in the night before the pay-per-view was live, where she's in the ring and gets interrupted by Francine, who gives her one of the shittiest stunners you'll ever see. And a low blow to the guy identified as Mr. Right, who Jasmine St. Clair was in the ring with. And Jasmine and Francine just leaves the ring after this. So Jasmine would be involved in ECW for quite a while after this, was, of course, would eventually be involved with the Blue Meanie and had a bit of a lengthy run with ECW.
Mm-hmm.
And that is our update on Jasmine St. Clair.
Yeah, what is she doing today?
Today, I believe she hosts a radio show. I believe.
Cool.
Then we had Mustafa and New Jack. Jack comes out in the ghetto, as our song that we heard throughout this.
Yeah.
You can go to our last ECW review for a thorough breakdown of the New Jack theme music history.
Yes, that's right. I mean, as far as replacement theme songs go, I didn't think this was all that bad. I thought it fit the character, but of course, it got really annoying when you had to listen to this throughout the entire match. And
essentially,
I mean, the annoying part is that you don't get to hear the crowd noise come through, which is,
that was
again,
the New Jack act.
Yeah.
That was everything was this crowd. It wasn't a match that he was a part of. It was just an insane spectacle for 10 minutes. And that's what this was. Jack came out with a garbage can full of weapons, attacks Mustafa as the music is playing. He uses a keyboard, which allows Joey to get his cute comments in, such as, "Now that's interactive." Because it was a keyboard. He used a golf club into a metal sign to the balls of Mustafa. Then Mustafa comes back and attacks him with a kid's plastic lawnmower and a metal can, a cookie sheet, and then he gets hit with an elbow, and Jack slumps down, attacks Mustafa with the keyboard again, and then he grabs a guitar, and he goes to hit him with it, and the base of the guitar does not break, and he uses it a second time to make sure it cracks over his head. Mustafa then low blows him, and they fight into the crowd. Jack hits him with a hard chair shot, and then Jack sets him up on a table by a balcony, and in order to suspend the disbelief that Mustafa will lay on this table in a perfect position for the time it takes Jack to escalate to the top of the balcony, he used electrical tape to tie this 280-pound man to a table, and this tape was able to restrain the man.
Well, at least they addressed it.
I guess so. Security assists New Jack as he's mobbed by the crowd climbing up onto this balcony, and then he dives off, almost falling short here. I mean, he was lucky to catch Mustafa. The table did break. New Jack, by far, took the worst of this. And he's talked about this, where these balcony dives, like, they started out as this giant novelty, and then it became, like, expected. And it was just, like, you've probably never thought of this balcony dive with the Mustafa balcony dive. It just became part of it. And when you look at this locker room and the amount of painkiller issues and all of this, like, New Jack was doing this on almost every pay-per-view, and it just became expected. And this was one of them, and he looked like he was dead after this. They had to, like, help this man to the ring to fall apart on top of this man and pin him as they replayed the balcony dive, and New Jack gets the win.
Looked cool, though.
It looked cool.
Looked really
it was
cool.
A very high balcony dive by New Jack.
So, I was just amazed that after the dive, this match was still it still had to continue.
I didn't think either could stand at this point, in particular New Jack. Like, I didn't think he could stand on his own at this point.
Yeah.
So the Dudleys come down and attack New Jack, and they are with Joel Gertner and Sign Guy. And they hold New Jack up so Sign Guy can slap him, and then they toss him out of the ring because that was probably the extent to which New Jack could even sell for these guys, because he was in desperate need of some medical attention.
Sure.
Gertner gets down, gets on the microphone and says, "Sit on my pelvis and you'll feel the shit that killed Elvis." Two pelvis references in one show.
You'll feel the shit that killed Elvis.
This was not one of Joel Gertner's finer rhymes.
Like,
this entire intro he did, I didn't think was very clever.
What does that mean? Like,
maybe he'll get high off of, or the person will get high off of sitting on his pelvis. I don't know what the logic of this poem was.
Killed Elvis?
Elvis rhymes with pelvis. That's all you needed to know. And he does this long intro. Bubba takes the mic and calls New Jack old news.
Old Jack.
Old Jack. Thank you. He threatens to beat everyone's ass in the arena. Sign Guy says that Bubba is down 30 pounds. Not the best shape of his life. That would be in TNA.
Yeah.
But still, he was losing weight. He was no longer Monty Vile 400-pound Bubba Ray. And says there is no team with the guts to take them on tonight. And he lays down an open challenge, which leads to Spike Dudley and Nova running down. Bubba murders Spike with a metal sign to the head. And then Gorilla presses Spike into the crowd where Spike's leg gets caught on the barricade upon landing.
Mm-hmm.
Very good for the knees long term.
And this was also another crazy looking stunt. I mean, and this crowd just starts to carry Spike, and he's crowd surfing, and the ECW crowd.
This was
like,
nuts.
Like he's Christ. It was some incredible visuals on this show, I'll say.
Then Devon hit the diving headbutt to the groin of Nova, and Bubba hit a Bubba bomb off the turnbuckle, and they hit the 3D to him. Then ring announcer Bob Ortiz is telling them to stop, so they deliver the 3D to Ortiz. Bubba says there is nobody left, they have destroyed all of their heroes, and challenges any of the fans to fight them. This leads to Judge Jeff Jones coming out with a stretcher, followed by Sid coming out in jeans to a monstrous pop. This was the most over guy on this show, in my opinion.
Yeah, I was surprised.
This was Sid's very brief ECW run where he came out, his segments were short, and he murdered guys.
Yeah.
And everyone loved him, which Sid has always had that Northeast support when the WWF would go there and they would cheer him as the heel. Sid was a fit in ECW. The issue was this guy was not going to get booked to lose to anybody, and he was only in there for a short time, and he would be in WCW by June of this year. So they really couldn't put him with anyone of note in ECW, right. And he was largely – they were just throwing guys in to sacrifice him. He was the Chris Cyborg of ECW at the time, where Chris Cyborg is just throwing people, and none of the contenders are being thrown her way.
Sure.
Bubba calls him a blonde and adds an F word that I will not repeat, but it was not fuck. And this was not censored way.
Yeah.
Bubba had a profanity, an affinity, I should say, for this word at the time. And then they're beating on Sid, and Bubba says he's got a pretty mouth for a country boy. Which I don't know what the next step was in the Dudley's plan with Sid.
I don't know. Something to do with pelvises, probably.
Probably. Sid comes back and hits a double chokeslam for a massive pop, powerbombs Devon, places Devon on a stretcher that Jeff Jones has brought out. Spike returns and attacks Bubba and hits a leg drop to Spike off the top. Sid then drops the stretcher onto Devon. There's a low blow to Bubba. Then Spike hits the acid drop and pins Bubba. And then after the match, Sid powerbombs Spike and they still cheer Sid, even when they turn on the underdog Spike and takes him onto the ramp and power bombs Spike off the stage through a table on the floor. This poor Matt Heisen. Holy Christ.
They made Sid look so cool. You know?
He was the top babyface on this show, in my opinion. He was above Taz.
And all he had to do, I mean, he just played like the monster. And I obviously it helps, you know, being in a company like ECW where Sid is legitimately way bigger than almost everybody on the roster.
And there's a giant Sid chant, and Sid heavily encouraged this. He's waving his arms up in the air. Come on, louder, louder.
He was booked as a babyface.
Hey, Paul Heyman has always booked big guys very effectively. He's always known the strengths of guys like Sid or like Paul White.
Yeah.
9-1-1. He's always had a very good ability to book these guys. But there was only so far you could go with Sid. And I'm sure they realized that in this era where anybody with any kind of a name and a look were scooped up by the two big guys, WWE and WCW, this guy was going to get grabbed by one of them. And it turned out to be WCW.
Yeah. So much stuff happened in this match that,
this was hardly a match even. It was,
and that's ECW where there's no DQ. And so Sid comes in, does all this stuff, and Bubba in the middle is grabbing the microphone and talking to Sid and talking to everybody else in the middle of the match. And then I'm being reminded that the match is still going on. So it's all a little ridiculous when, you know, all this stuff happens. Sid drops a stretcher on Devon's back, and then Spike comes in still for the pinfall, and the referee comes in like this match still matters. So I there was no reaction for that pinfall by the time it finally happened. And I also feel like Bubba, obviously a great promo. We talked a lot about it last week on the documentary, but the type of raunch doesn't really age very well.
Nope.
And so, you know, but there are some very nice looking stunts.
Shane Douglas was the focus of our next video feature because he had been dealing with injuries and he's teasing his retirement on television and is going to name who the next franchise of ECW will be as he's going to announce his retirement. But he gets interrupted by Justin Credible and Lance Storm, and they both believe they're the next franchises in ECW, but he says, no, the next franchise is Tommy Dreamer. And it led to a Kane attack to Douglas and this campy 80s instrumental music that they used to play out the story leading into our big tag match.
So campy. And I don't know if this was a WWE Network swap or not. I would hope not, because anybody who chose to use this song...
So unfitting. And it went on forever.
But it was like, it was almost, seemed like it was done for camp value. You know what I mean? Like it was this cheesy, and to kind of, counter it with shots of a guy hitting somebody else over the head with a Singapore cane kind of made it work, I thought.
Okay. That was bad. Then we had our entrances. Justin Credible and Lance come out with Jason, Jazz, and Dawn Marie, who at this time was calling herself Beulah McGillicuddy. For whatever reason.
To tease Tommy Dreamer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And their opponents, Shane Douglas and Tommy Dreamer. You could not find music that didn't fit these two if you tried. This was the worst infraction I've ever seen of this production music. This was so awfully bad. And this music, never in a million years... would you say, yeah, Tommy Dreamer and Shane Douglas entrance music, if you were to hear this?
Oh, of course not.
It was so awful.
No, the music is such a big part of these people, of ECW in general. And again, this is not a knock on the WWE because...
I can get why you use production music, but you cannot tell me that you were stuck to just using this choice.
That is true. That is true. I almost feel like, though, it's almost become like a bit of a sick curiosity to see what they will replace Tommy Dreamer's theme with, or, you know, or the Sandman's theme with, when I watch one of these WWE Network ECW shows. To the point where I feel like in the future somebody will, like, I could see them on the Edge and Christian show making fun of this.
Yes, this theme song I will call Creativity in a Box to replace Alice in Chains. So they're out. Everyone is introduced. There's like 10 million people here in the corners. Francine is out with Shane Douglas and Tommy Dreamer. There's a chant of Fuck You Canada directed at Lance Storm. And just incredible, wearing his Tommy Hilfiger jean shorts.
It worked for him. That was his look. That's his classic look. What do you prefer, the X-Factor tights?
Yeah, that was not good with the socks above the boots.
I don't think so.
And wearing a franchise t-shirt.
Ah, yeah.
Yellow's an underrated color. It works for a lot of people.
Sure. Where's your yellow shirt?
I don't have a yellow t-shirt. I'm not one of the people that can pull it off. But if I had a better tan, maybe.
Yeah, Tommy Hilfiger jeans, maybe.
Yeah, perhaps.
Jean shorts.
Dreamer has Credible in an abdominal stretch. And Douglas then press slams Lance and drops him onto Credible. They got the heat on Douglas early. Some of the chants from this crowd were just, they don't age well either.
Oh. Yeah.
Dirty Whore might have been the most polite one they chanted.
Yeah. She's got herpes. I mean, I suppose when you're in a crowd, it's like shouting, it's like posting a YouTube comment anonymously. You can't attribute one single chant to any one person when you're screaming it in as part of a crowd.
Yes, this was a crowd of YouTube commenters.
Pretty much.
The worst ones.
Yeah.
Like the ones that are live chatting when there's a UFC weigh-in. And it's just the most reprehensible comments imaginable, and you just have to close it.
Most of them are racial slurs.
90% of them tend to be.
Yeah.
So the match continues here. There's a chant of Ric Flair sucks as they double-team Shane Douglas. They're tagging in and out. Credible misses a baseball slide in the corner and crotches himself as Douglas tags Dreamer in. Dreamer clotheslines Credible to the floor. Dreamer hits a Dreamer driver to Lance Storm for a two count. There was this goofy spot as Dreamer swung Credible into the ring and hit a sunset flip onto his partner. And then Lance ran at Justin Credible to hit a clothesline. Justin ducks, and then Tommy Dreamer ducks. This, you need to watch this transition because this was awful.
It at some point disintegrated, and even Styles was confused, admittedly.
Like, I think Lance was confused. I think Tommy Dreamer was confused. Joey Styles was confused because Lance is running at Justin with the clothesline that Justin has to duck. And then Tommy ducks it, and it just seems everyone was out of position, and I think on different pages here. They got the advantage on Dreamer. Storm hit a vertical suplex as he gives Douglas the finger, which they digitized the middle finger of Lance Storm when they allowed Bubba Ray's diatribe to go uncensored.
Yeah.
Some curious editing on this show.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to digitize Lance Storm's middle finger.
Oh, no, middle finger, no.
Which they did allow the word fuck to go fine in this.
Plenty of times.
Like, what a weird...
It was very inconsistent. And I mean, as somebody who is kind of like, maybe knows a little bit about how the process is made, I would only assume that some intern was in charge of taking all the notes here. Maybe this intern fell asleep midway through the show and missed all these other chants. So, who knows? That could be it.
Douglas eventually gets the tag. And he gets in, and he teases a reunion after all this time with Lance Storm and Justin Credible. But this was also at the height of these stupid swerves, so I totally buy the audience buying into this. And he even shoves Tommy Dreamer away, and they all think they're going to join together when Douglas instead attacks them and yells, "Fuck these fucknuts."
Yeah.
Uncensored, by the way.
I thought you explained that attempt at trying to sell that swerve, I mean, with a lot more drama than it played out.
This audience, I don't think, fully understood what the hell was going on.
I certainly didn't. I mean, but watching it play out, it just seemed like it was a very half-assed attempt at teasing a swerve that didn't really work at all with this crowd. Got no reaction.
So then Dawn, Beulah, Marie, McGillicuddy, low blow Shane Douglas. Francine comes in and the people go wild. It's a catfight spot. Lance then grabs Francine and dumps her to the floor. Francine then goes and brings a ladder down to the ring because this match needed more. Dreamer dumps Credible onto the ladder. They do a teeter-totter spot, knocking the ladder into the faces of Storm and Credible. Then there's a gourd buster to Storm. Dreamer hits a DDT to Credible, and then Douglas hits the belly-to-belly. Credible kicks out. Francine then stops a cane shot by grabbing the cane of Credible, and Francine hits a Miracle Krokop head kick to Justin Credible, and Douglas follows with the Pittsburgh plunge and pins Credible after 19 minutes. This went way too long, and there was so much detail to this match. This one just kind of lost me.
Detail that was kind of lost, and detail that maybe looked better on paper than in execution.
But the story here was that Douglas was near retirement. He was beaten down by these young punks, and he had to team up with someone that he had never teamed with. That's a simple story to me. And it was just so much was tacked on top of this, and it was like just way too much for me.
Yeah, I thought it had hints. I mean, you look at, you know, there are four very talented individuals in the match, and I think it had hints of being a decent match, but at some point it just all fell apart.
So after this, after Douglas and Dreamer get the win, Cyrus, who had recently debuted, Don Callis comes out, and Storm hits a springboard clothesline to Douglas and Dreamer on the ramp. They deliver cane shots, then they attack Francine, and Callis covers up Francine with his jacket, teasing his future network character, and then headbutts her in her groin.
Yeah.
And she is in immense pain from this, and the Impact players pose in the ring, and Joey Styles is disgusted at this.
Sure. Again, I thought it was another attempt at a swerve that was quite poorly executed and received very little reaction.
That was it. The feud was continuing. It was one of those, we'll do the finish, and then the losers get their heat back instantly, and we really haven't solved much by the end of all of this. So that was that. Then they went back and showed highlights of the Van Damme Lynn match, and this is where Stephen Prazak catches up with referee John Finnegan and says that Lynn was the winner of the match, and Finnegan explains that this isn't Holyfield Lewis, which got more mentions than most of the talent on this show. Says people want to see a winner. Things are different in ECW, I'll say. And then Van Damme walks in. He puts over Jerry Lynn. He told Paul Heyman he doesn't need bullshit storylines. And Lynn gave him one of his best matches, and he issues a challenge to Lynn at the next pay-per-view and has to ask Stephen Prazak what it's called. And he says, Hardcore Heaven. And then he went on for another, like, 18 minutes talking with this awfully lit backstage promo and calls himself Mr. PPV.
I, the champion, challenge you, Jerry Lynn, to come back and challenge me again. Do it at the next pay-per-view. What's it called?
Let's go to Hardcore Heaven.
Do it at Hardcore Heaven, Jerry Lynn. Hey, let me be honest with you. I like to wrestle you. Come on back. Push me to my limits, Jerry. I'll tell you what. I mean, if I was to slip up and I did have to give the belt to you, no, forget about that. I'll tell you what, Jerry, you feel like this wasn't just, you feel like you got ripped off? Here's your chance to prove it. Come on back, because you did come close to taking the world television title, but, Jerry, you're too worried about giving the people their money's worth. Otherwise, things might have ended up a little differently. Here's what you got to realize. The people always get their money's worth when they watch me. I'm Rob Van Dam. I'm not just Mr. Monday Night. I'm not just the whole fucking show. I'm the people's choice. That's me. Mr. PPVRVD.
Longer promo than necessary, but did set up a match for the next pay-per-view, and I think no one was complaining about that.
Yeah, I didn't dislike it. I thought RVD cut a good, cocky promo. It's not your traditional pro wrestling delivery, but I think it totally worked for his personality type.
They showed footage of Sabu's jaw being broken during a match with Taz, and the jaw is all taped up. Taz is on the mic and says that the fans waited in the rain for 3 hours, and he wants this to be a Falls Count Anywhere match, teasing maybe they'll finish this out in the rain. And Alfonso pleads with Sabu not to accept this, but Sabu accepts. So we have our main event involving Taz and Sabu for the ECW and FTW titles. As we had mentioned, this whole show had been built upon this match. They really gave this the main event feel. Sabu goes down from the very first punch delivered to the jaw, and then it's Taz working it over with cross faces. Sabu came back. He went for a triple jump cross body into the crowd and landed on a chair that Taz got up upon landing. They brawled throughout the crowd, including one individual who was not wearing a shirt in this crowd. Sabu jumps off a chair onto the ramp and takes down Sabu in the crowd. They're going for covers on the ramp. A table is then lodged between the ring and the barricade, and Taz hits this belly-to-belly, sending Sabu over the top and through this table, and the screen goes black momentarily from a cameraman going down. But this looked, I mean, they executed this perfectly for what it was to be. Mm-hmm. Looked very dangerous.
And even the camera cutting out added to the effect of it.
Taz is beating on Sabu, and he yells, "Look at him! Look at him! Fuck him! Mm-hmm. Hey, Flair! Hey, Hogan, at least he's got balls." And Alfonso is going to throw in the towel, and Sabu stops him. Alfonso then uses a chair on Taz, and he sends Alfonso to the back. Sabu is bleeding from the mouth and onto the tape for his broken jaw. Sabu then stops Taz on the top and hits a top rope Hurricane Rana. Taz hit a twisting sit-out powerbomb, but the crowd was really not reacting to a lot of this. They were doing a lot of big spots, I found, and I just didn't feel the crowd was... It was very much like the recent Ring of Honor show and some of their other events, where you know it's a hot crowd, but it's not translating to me through the broadcast. Then we had Sabu go for a sunset flip powerbomb to the floor, and his feet got caught on the barricade. And instead of powerbombing Taz, Taz came down and landed straight on Sabu and did more damage to Sabu than to Taz here.
I can't imagine if he had actually executed that powerbomb.
Where Taz would have gone.
Yeah, because...
Maybe he realized that mid-move.
I would hope so, because if Taz had actually let go and
his head wouldn't have come down on the barricade.
It would have been awful.
Taz gets put through a table on the floor, and Sabu splashes him off the top. He kicks out. Alfonso returns here to ringside. There's a triple jump moonsault by Sabu for a two count. And then Taz comes back with suplex after suplex. Hits one off the second turnbuckle. Sabu keeps kicking out. Then Taz hits a dragon suplex through a table in the corner. And Sabu kicks out of that. They were doing a great job of making Sabu just this guy that will not give up no matter what. And then Alfonso is pleading to stop the match. And the towel gets thrown in. But then Sabu throws the towel out. And Taz applies the Taz mission, the Kacha Jamae. And then he keeps the arm up at two. Taz sinks it in deeper. And then Sabu finally goes out at 18 minutes and 29 seconds. This was a really strong main event.
Yeah, I really like this match. Actually, my favorite match on the show. I think Taz is just, this version of Taz is just such a joy to watch wrestle. Very technical, very stiff looking, suplexes, and great heel mannerisms too. I feel like he would have been a perfect fit in today's style. Probably would have even had more success if he was, you know, at his peak around the time when guys, like him are more appreciated, I'd say on a more mainstream level in the WWE right now. I love his, in-ring. And I thought Sabu, I mean, this was a match where you had two very distinct styles, but I thought the two of them really complemented each other well. And Sabu, I thought, you know, his whole thing is just a lack of hesitation in doing anything that he does. And as a result, you can expect maybe like, 30% of what he does to look completely awful. But I didn't think so here. I thought here maybe 8% of it looked bad. The rest, I thought it was pretty good, everything that he did. So I thought the story was good. I thought these two, in ring had pretty good chemistry together. The only criticism I would have was all the Fonzie stuff on the outside, trying to, you know, all the stuff with the towel and trying to show concern for Sabu. I think the direction of the show could have done a lot better in focusing on Fonzie, in kind of bringing the viewer more attention to the concern that he had. As it played out, it just kind of seemed like that story wasn't told that well visually, I thought.
Yeah, I didn't even really notice until Styles mentioned the fact that it was Sabu that threw the towel out. They really didn't focus on that too well. But this was a great main event. I think ECW, I think this really helped at this time. You did have a very serious, credible champion, and doing serious main event matches was something that could really benefit ECW at this time. And Sabu, I mean, there's time when this guy is on, you get matches like this. And there's matches where he's off, where it's just, it seems like one thing falls apart and it's a house of cards. And it becomes very sloppy. But this was a great main event.
I think that a big part of that just comes down to his style, where he's just like, he is taking a risk and possibly landing wrong with everything that he does. It almost just seems like he's like throwing darts with his body, basically.
And especially on a show where it was raining all night and it was slippery inside.
That's right.
So,
but here he happened to land almost everything.
Yeah, I'm with you. I really enjoyed this main event a lot. It was this and the TV title match to me that were the standouts. But overall, I mean, a lot of ECW shows you go back and a lot of the wrestling, it doesn't really hold up. It's very much a promotion that there's so much of the spectacle of an ECW show and that feel to it. This was a good show.
Yeah,
I really did enjoy this, going back and watching it. This show didn't really drag to me all that much. I give this show a 7 out of 10.
I thought this show had a lot of really great matches on paper, and I thought we had really good glimpses of, like, the best potential of ECW in, you know, Super Crazy versus Tajiri, or in Jerry Lynn versus RVD, and here in the main event. I thought some of these matches, you know, were near flawless. Some of them kind of faltered by the end. And you know, as a result, I can't really rate it as, you know, one of the higher rated ECW shows that I've ever seen. But I'll say, like, in terms of the stunts we saw on the show, I thought, you know, Bubba Ray throwing Spike into the crowd, that always looks cool. We got a New Jack stage dive, a number of table spots in the main event. All that stuff looked really good. But I do feel like it kind of faltered in some of the storytelling. I thought there were things like, you know, the FBI breaking up, or Cyrus coming in to swerve Francine, or even like the stuff, the towel stuff I mentioned with Fonzie in the main event. That all seemed kind of poorly executed in front of a live audience. So I maybe give it more like, maybe more of a 7.
Who is the MVP of this show, Wei? One person.
I thought Taz. I really enjoyed Taz. Between his wrestling, and I really enjoyed his promo work too. And he seemed like, you know, the person that the company was being built around as a champion right now. He seemed like the most valuable guy, in my opinion.
I will co-sign that. I thought Taz was great on this show. So there you go. That was our review of Living Dangerously 1999. So from there, we are going to go to your feedback up at lawradio.proboards.com. We start off here with Patrick from Indiana. I honestly have a love-hate relationship with ECW. With all the great work that these guys put in, it's hard not to love it. But knowing how my wrestling career ended due to a concussion, but how, I think he means how many, anyway, it's hard.
Maybe he's a wrestler.
Maybe he is. Anyway, it's hard not to look away every time they use any of these unprotected chair shots, which I do agree. It's very hard to go back and watch these. And I think many of these guys would, agree with that same statement.
Mm-hmm. We go to, up next, McWhalen, who says, this show had two bright points, the appearance of Sid and yet another Jerry Lynn RVD match. I know this is one of ECW's more beloved feuds, but am I the only one who thought the feud was too one-sided? RVD won like 90% of their matches. Anyway, the other highlight is New Jack whiffing on the balcony dive and barely hitting Mustafa and nearly killing himself in the process. Everything else was either squatches or watchable, but the Gangsta's match was just a disaster. Living Dangerously gets 3 New Jack botched balcony dives out of 10.
Yeah, I wasn't a very big fan of the New Jack Mustafa stuff, but that to me didn't drag the entire show down. And, you know, I guarantee you, if you were to watch the actual footage of that on pay-per-view that night, I think people would be more high on it, just because the crowd, I guarantee you, was super into that. Christian, this show highlights a lot of ECW's most notorious feuds. We got Tajiri Crazy, Dudley's and Spike, RVD Lynn, Dreamer Credible, and Taz Sabu. But to be honest, the lower part of a lot but to be honest, the lower part of a lot of these feuds. This had probably one of the better, if not the best, RVD-Lynn match, but the others had some of the weakest in their series. We also got a couple of short matches, and the split of the gangsters really didn't feel as important as it should. To me, this is another case of looking back at ECW and it showing that it wasn't gold every single show. This felt more like a TV show than an important pay-per-view.
We go to Jamie from England. I've never watched an ECW show, so this was a first for me, and overall, I came away disappointed and underwhelmed. The clear highlight for me was RVD, although his match was tainted by that shitting whistle and the odd false finish. This was the most enjoyable version of him I can remember. Although New Jack is a questionable person, his willingness to do crazy spots is incredible. Strange that they wouldn't do a stip to allow the three count to happen straight after the spot instead of being dragged back. Overall, lost interest in this show really quickly. As someone else said, this highlights not everything ECW touched turned to gold. 5 slow-mo emotional music video packages out of 10. 2 questions for you guys. With Sid, what was the plan for him? He seemed so out of place with the roster. He made Landstorm look like Tommy Dreamer on my self-invented ECW scale. Also, why are WWE so insistent on a 3-man booth? I really didn't like Styles as a 1-man. Graves and Phillips and NXT are incredible as a 2-man. And the 3-man booths with Saxton are weak, but WWE seemed to have no desire to change.
With ECW, it would change very much to where he was doing it with Gertner and Don Callis. And I agree. I think I enjoyed the 2-mans more with Joey Styles than the one. The 1-man was novel, and he did do some very good shows by himself. But I think he benefited by having a color guy.
I being so overexposed to 3-man booths, hearing a 1-man booth on a show like this was a really nice change of pace where, you know, Styles was really just kind of calling the action and would occasionally add a bit of color to it and really just let the show speak for itself. But maybe if it was all the time, maybe, you know, I probably wouldn't feel that way. But what were the plans for Sid?
Sid, I don't think there was anything really long term because I don't think there was ever that belief that he would be there all that long. And the fact was he was a guy that was going to be very specific. I think if he's coming in, he's not going to be putting guys over. I don't think anyone would have expected that, and therefore you couldn't put him in with the top guys and just have Sid beat these guys. And in hindsight, that was the right choice because by June he had left the company, and he was, during this very small window, he was in the company. I mean, you just have to look at this show at how over this guy was. But he wasn't doing all the ECW house shows. I mean, he was doing very select dates with the company at this time. So I don't think there was really anything concrete with Sid beyond kind of this role as coming out for his babyface pop and killing some guys lower on the card. Ryan from Calgary. This was a well-paced and solid show, but also an unspectacular one. I used to read the results of these shows at liveaudiowrestling.com, and I always wanted to watch RVD and the Tajiri versus Super Crazy matches. I always love seeing moonsaults, so Super Crazy and RVD are two of my favorites. On this show, I got Super Crazy doing moonsaults off all 3 turnbuckles and a cabrada, but RVD split-legged one too. What more could I ask for? Yeah, if you love moonsaults, this is a great show for you. Question. I've been catching up on some PWG, Evolve, and New Japan, and I'm seeing a few guys wearing mouth guards. Given that they can make a big difference in preventing concussions, do you think more should be done to encourage wrestlers to use them? There is the argument, I think the deeply flawed argument, that wearing protective devices encourages riskier behavior, but in a system as rigid as the WWE one, it is unlikely that they would start working a more dangerous style. I've heard that they are having trainees wear some type of helmet in the performance center while bumping, and I think anything that can reduce impact on the brain should be looked into. I think you're getting a lot of it more where it's not even just the fact that it could be a good preventive measure for any kind of, you know, getting your bell rung for a concussion, but also for a lot of guys, it's just, it fits their look and their style. When you have a Kyle O'Reilly, for instance, that uses a mouth guard.
The MMA guys.
Or Shibata.
Yeah. I don't think you'll ever see a headgear in a professional wrestling match. Not, I don't even know how long they make guys wear headgear in NXT in the Performance Center, but you're never going to see that in any form in a pro wrestling match that is supposed to be done for an audience. I don't think. As far as mouth guards, I mean, a lot of these people are, I mean, they're taking back bumps. And I don't know how much a mouth guard would necessarily help for that. Obviously shots to the head, I think that it adds an extra level of, you know, protection.
Have you ever taken a back body drop with a mouth guard?
I haven't. And I don't know how much difference it would make, you know, to impact to that, to your actual head. But concussions seem to happen, you know, in the
You're never
going to
eradicate concussions. It's just simply lessening that. I mean, I can tell you, not to the extent probably of you, but I have had my bell rung a few times when I've not worn a mouth guard. And it's like you should, in most cases, I think wearing a mouth guard, if it fits your character, and I think just not the worst idea in the world for some of these guys.
Yeah, it doesn't really – I suppose it doesn't really hurt. I feel like, though, pro wrestling is such a – there's such an old-school mentality to it that there are going to be a lot of guys fighting against
you. Do you think New Jack would have worn a mouth guard back in 99?
Probably not. And unless there's some, like, real testing done to show that, hey, mouth guards do really help prevent concussions – I don't really think that anybody will really be enforcing it. I mean, the WWE maybe. I could see them potentially doing it as a PR move, you know, to show that, hey, we care so much that we're going to make our guys wear mouth guards. But I know you might get a lot of resistance from actual wrestlers who probably think it's useless.
Yeah, I don't think you're ever going to see it kind of mandated or anything like that. Anyway, that is going to wrap up the show for us. Wade, do you have any selection of what you would like to review next week?
You know what? Why don't we take it to the request thread and see if there's anything.
All right. We will take a look. It's fine. I have a backup if we don't find anything. Okay. So let's go to the request thread.
Lawradio.poorboards.com.
Yes, and there we have it, a very well-maintained request thread. Oh, boy.
So, I mean, we've had a lot of discussion about our choices for shows. What would you say are our criteria? We don't necessarily even have that much, but we do have, I guess,
okay, here's the first thing. I want to be able to access it very easily.
And mainly for our audience to be able to access it quite easily as well.
Yes.
So, I mean, I'm seeing a lot of requests for, like, some of these are just kind of tougher to find. But then there are a lot of ones that are actually quite easy. So, I know John's just kind of scrolling through TNA, which maybe I need a break from.
Yeah, everyone needs a break.
A lot of WCW.
What are we into now? We're in the month of May?
Yeah. May.
At least they conveniently skip May. Unless we have a Wrestle War Music City Showdown.
But okay. But I feel like occasionally we should just like do a show that's maybe not the easiest to find, but, you know.
We can do something off the beaten path if you would like.
I mean, maybe we're kind of due. Okay, out of all these shows, John, that are on this list, that you would watch regardless of being able to, having to do a review, which one would you choose to watch out of your own curiosity if you didn't even have to record a show for it?
I would go.
John is hovering around the NWA.
NWA is always fun to go back and watch. Just scrolling here. I'm going to cut a lot of this out.
Sure.
The CZW Ultra Violent Tournament of Death, number 2. Let's see what's here on CZW. We've never reviewed CZW. Is there a full show they have?
Yeah, let's do a CZW, sir. Isn't that, don't they have, they've got their own. They've got their own channel.
Oh.
Maybe we should take a break from,
Hardcore. Okay.
Hey, how about DDT?
DDT?
Yeah, go right there. Go down. Or just go to the thread. Right there.
Oh.
After Ryu, Goku.
Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi.
Okay.
See if, yeah, that, sure. See if that one's up.
I've always wanted to watch a DDT show. No way. How about Google? Try Google video.
DDT Camping Ground Pro Wrestling.
Okay, that's probably not. Oh. The fuck? Oh my god. Yeah, I don't know if we can do that.
That's really go to Google Video.
We are DDT Punk Will Never Die. I don't even know if this is wrestling.
Do search tools. Go to search tools.
Where's that?
Right there, under next to more.
Oh.
And could change your duration. Plus 20, yeah.
Sweet Dreams 2016. Yeah. January 31st, 2016. I mean, it doesn't have like Omega or any of those guys. I feel like the draw would be like it should be a Kota Ibushi,
right,
show. Ah, fuck, maybe we can't do it. Because, I mean, nobody else will be able to find it if we're having this much trouble.
Do you have any interest in doing the Nitro where Scott Hall debuts? Just because it was, it's 20 years from the...
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds great.
Do you want to do that one and when Nash shows up or just one?
Yeah, we can do.
They're not like 3-hour Nitros or anything.
Yeah, sure. We can do both.
They're 90 minutes each, unless you think that's too much. No. Unless you'd rather look at something else. I don't care.
No, that actually sounds pretty good.
Okay. So wait, next week, we are going to be reviewing two episodes of WCW Monday Nitro.
Oh, that's a great suggestion. You just thought of that off the top of your head?
It just came to me because, you know, it was May of 96.
Wow.
That Scott Hall showed up in WCW. And it was just 2 weeks later that Kevin Nash showed up.
That's like 20 years ago.
That's 20 years ago.
The 20-year anniversary of the NWO.
Wow, 20 years away. And yet, it still seems that the WWE is transfixed on that era. But we are going to go back and review, as I look up here on the network for the exact dates here, to May the 27th of 96. Then we will skip a week and go to June 10th of 96, which featured the debut of Kevin Nash.
Okay.
Spoiler alert.
Gotcha.
Kevin Nash and Scott Hall show up on these shows. So May 27th and June 10th, which was the setup for the Great American Bash pay-per-view. So we will see how they handled the reveal of Scott Hall and then teasing that a friend of his would be showing up later as well.
Mm-hmm.
Are you excited?
I am, totally.
Okay, these are two-hour editions of Nitro, which translate to about 90 minutes. So combined, they will still be less actual time than Monday's episode of Raw. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right.
I am.
Well, here we go. That is coming up next week on the show. And in the next few weeks, I don't know when, but we will be having Damian Abraham on the show to do a review.
Oh, we are.
He has a plan.
Okay.
He has something he wants to review with us.
Uh-oh.
And I said I had to run it by Way, and I've forgotten to, so I'm running it by you now.
All right.
So
what is it?
We'll discuss it after.
Okay.
So
cool.
We're teasing, Way. We're teasing. You got to build.
Maybe it's an episode of Canadian Cannabis.
No, we won't review his own stuff.
On Vice.
Yeah. We'd have to be very
great
critical.
Show, by the way.
Yeah, have you watched it?
I have, yeah.
I've not
very
seen
informative
it.
About the Canadian marijuana scene.
Actually, I've seen some of the interviews he's done.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching one where he was interviewing, I want to say, the mayor of Denver and explained to him the pot laws in Canada.
In the latest one, he actually gets beaten up by a female kickboxer.
Oh!
Yeah.
Well, that's fun.
A female kickboxer who also happens to make her own edibles.
All right. Well, we will see Damian Abraham eat some kicks from a noted female kickboxer.
And maybe eat something else.
Okay. Well, that is going to wrap up the show, folks. Thank you for tuning in. We are back with all our usual shows at liveaudiowrestling.com. And next week, two episodes of Nitro to review, May 27th and June 10th of 1996. And we will speak with you next week.
see the franchise Shane Douglas and the innovator of violence, Tommy Dreamer, have nothing but revenge on their mind. To be a war.